Good evening, everyone, and can I welcome you to the Planning Committee meeting. This meeting of the Planning Committee is going to be broadcast live to the internet and will be stored as part of the Council's website archive. I have the direction to terminate or suspend filming if, in my opinion, allowing filming to continue would prejudice the proceedings of the meeting. Equally so, items that are heard in private will not be made available to the public. Members are reminded that the cameras are activated by the sound system and that they must switch on the microphones when speaking and off when finished. Thank you very much for listening. Can I welcome you to the Planning Committee, as I've said, and can we have the order of business, please?
Chair, firstly I'll give apologies. In terms of apologies, we've Councillor Johnston, Councillor Parry and Councillor Wallace. Order of business is as printed in the agenda, with the exception of item number 5.7, top of page 3, which has been held over due to an irregularity, which will be corrected and brought back to members at some future date.
Okay, with that announcement, we get on with the agenda as per advised. Can I therefore ask for any members if they have any declarations of interest? Councillor Hackett.
The declaration on item 5.4, which I notified the committee of last time, and my position remains the same.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Muirhead.
No, just to say, I think a number of councillors, certainly myself and Councillor Milligan, visited the Roslyn Lee site at the request of the developers to just have a look round the actual layout of the site, but obviously nothing was said that prejudged anything.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. That's on the public record. Councillor Curnan, I'll go right round.
Thanks, Chair. On item 5.4, I'd requested a motion, the information that was available to me at the time on that. Remain to have an open mind pending the discussion, and I'm just wondering if I can take part in that discussion.
Thank you, Chair. This is a reference to paragraph 711 of the Councillor's Code of Conduct, where members are not supposed to prejudge an application before hearing the information. If the motion was made in good faith on the information available at that time, and there was subsequently a motion to defer it, then provided you have an open mind as to the information coming forward, then you'd still be entitled to hear. If you feel yourself that you have prejudged it, it'd be up to yourself to leave. But if you are confident you have an open mind to look at the fresh information and make your decision on that basis, then you'd be entitled to stay.
Thanks for the guidance. Yeah, I retain an open mind, and any decision I make will be based on the information available today.
Okay, thank you. Who was next along the line? Declaration of interest. Councillor Douglas.
Actually, we could all speak. We paid a visit and nothing was said. It was just shown around the site.
Okay, that's duly noted. Going round, Councillor Cassidy.
We have the same in our group, apart from me.
Well, for those that attended.
Yeah.
Is that the same declaration or a different one?
No, sorry.
5.4, I won't take part in the decision due to a business interest.
Okay, thank you very much. That's duly noted as well. All right, that brings us on to... Sorry.
Likewise.
Sorry,
I suspect all councillors, I suspect, have attended Roslyn Lee.
Councillor Smale, we can't say all, because all never. That's why I was pretty clear in going round today. So some haven't actually gone out there and visited the site. Maybe they should have, but they never. Anyway, minutes of the previous meeting, which is on pages 5 to 24 of that was held on the 9th of October, for your approval. Are these minutes approved, including the private business? Right, thank you very much. That then brings us on to 5.1, which is the supplementary planning guidance on food and drink and other non-retail uses in town centres. Peter Arnsdorf.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of this report is to seek the committee's agreement to adopt the food and drink and other non-retail uses in town centres supplementary guidance. At its meeting of 7th of November 2018, 2017, the Council adopted the Midlothian Local Development Plan, which included a commitment to prepare supplementary guidance and planning guidance on a number of topic areas, including food and drink and other non-retail uses in town centres. At its meeting in June 2018, the committee approved the draft food and drink and other non-retail uses supplementary guidance for consultation and agreed to consider a further report following that consultation. In response to the consultation process, responses from six parties were received. The nature of the responses is set out in paragraph 3.3 of the report, and a full summary of the responses is attached to the report as Appendix A. In response to the consultation process, the guidance has been amended. The change has been identified in the track change version of the guidance, which is also attached to the report. The changes do not fundamentally change the document, but provide additional clarification. Town centres are experiencing change from a predominantly retail-based to a more holistic one, providing a range of services in one area. The change has resulted from national economic factors and a change in shopping habits, including the increase in online retail. As there is a shift to how town centres are used by residents, it is imperative that the Council sets out clear guidance detailing what is and what is not considered acceptable development. The guidance provides a framework to protect and enhance town centres and to ensure that the right development is directed into the right areas. Food and drink and other non-retail uses should not compromise the amenity, environment and functioning of town centres, but should be part of the wider range of facilities supporting vibrant and diverse commercial areas. The guidance seeks to ensure that these areas are allowed to thrive and develop to meet the changing needs of local communities, with uses and facilities which attract high footfall and economic benefits. The recommendation is that the committee adopts the food and drink and other non-retail uses in the town centre supplementary guidance, and that it instructs officers to undertake the required administrative processes as set out in Section 6 of the report, which includes notifying the Scottish ministers of the Council's intention to adopt the guidance.
OK, thank you very much indeed. I'll open it up for any members who've got any questions, comments. Anything at all? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. It's just I've read it, but just to clarify the process following, if we do choose to adopt this, I believe is there 14 days, is it, for the ministers to approve the guidance, is that correct?
Sorry, Chair, I was rustling the papers. I missed the question. Could I just...
It gets referred to Scottish ministers. If we approve the paper today, Peter will get on and do that job post-haste, and then it will form part of our supplementary planning guidance that goes along with the local development plan.
Yeah, Chair, just to add, the process is set out there in 6.1. There's also an advertising and notification process which we do in relation to strategic environment assessment. There's a process that involves. But once adopted, the supplementary guidance forms part of the policy, so it's the weight of the local plan. But like I say, it goes off to Scottish ministers, and then I'll come back to committee again just to confirm what the Scottish ministers advise.
Councillor Hackett.
Follow-up question. Thank you, Chair. So we would be able to rely upon this if we choose to adopt it, reflecting on future agenda items at today's meeting.
That's correct, Chair, and it's a material consideration which is getting more and more weight the further it goes through the process.
Sorry, are we quite happy to endorse the recommendations and send it off to Scottish ministers and go through the other process? Okay, thank you very much indeed. That then brings us on to item 5.2, which is on pages 73 to 78. Which is the major development applications currently being assessed and also other issues as well. Is there any members got any questions? This is the normal papers that come to you and give you an opportunity if you want to ask where things are within the status of the timetable. Anything at all? Okay, just note that paper. That then takes us on to 5.3, which is the appeals and local review body decisions, pages 79 to 86. Again, Peter, just want to do a quick report.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Again, it's just for the elected members' information. It's just notifying them of the local review body decisions, which were taken in October, and there's been an appeal decision which has been received, which is also attached to the paper.
Nothing on that, just for noting. Very happy to note. Thank you very much indeed. That then takes us on to the first application on today's agenda, which was continued from the last meeting, which is item 5.4 on pages 87 to 120. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of two drive-through restaurants, formation of access and car parking, and associated works. The application site is an area of unoccupied scrubland to the southwest of the existing car park at Tesco, Harden Green, Dalkeith. The northern unit will be sited parallel to the A7 and will be 12.2 metres wide, 29.8 metres long, and have a roof height of 5.1 metres. It is intended for occupation by a national drive-through restaurant chain. The southern unit will be sited perpendicular to the A7 and will be 11.3 metres wide and 17.7 metres long. The roof of the building will be 4.2 metres high with a vertical brick feature projecting to a height of 7.2 metres. It is intended for occupation by a national coffee chain. The buildings have a contemporary design with mono-pitched roofs, large areas of full-height glazing and a modern palette of finished materials. Both buildings are single-storey. The units will have a combined car parking capacity of 55 spaces. The access to the site will be at the eastern side of the site onto the existing access road, which connects to the S Bank Road roundabout. The site will be landscaped with particular emphasis on the western and southern boundaries. The site is located within the settlement boundary of Dalkeith, where appropriate forms of development are acceptable. The site is adjacent to an existing retail operator and a drive-through restaurant and is neighboured by a coachworks. In the absence of any restrictive development plan policies for the siting of restaurants within the built-up area, subject to their compatibility with the character and amenity of the area, the proposed use is acceptable in this location. There has been historical grants of planning permission for a restaurant on the site, and the committee granted planning permission for a drive-through restaurant on the neighbouring site at its meeting in April 2018. Consideration of the application was deferred from the committee's meeting in October to allow the committee to consider the report on the public consultation for the food and drink and other non-retail uses in the town centre. Section 3 of the update report sets out an assessment against the said guidance. During the period of deferment, the applicant submitted additional information in support of their application, in particular town centre health checks for Dalkeith and Bonnyrigg, which identify the mix of uses in those town centres and records the vacancy rates, which are below the national average and suggest the town centres are vital. The town centre's vitality and viability will not be significantly impacted by the proposed development. The October committee report sets out that there have been 3 representations and 6 consultation responses, the details of which are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the said report. 2 additional representations have been received since the committee's first consideration of the report. These are set out in the update report along with the officer's response to the points raised. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions and securing developer contributions towards the council's A7 urbanisation scheme.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I'll now open it up to members for questions stroke comments first of all before we move into making a decision. So, open it up. Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. It's a question for yourself or for Peter. When I look at the guidance that we've just adopted and it talks about drive-throughs and having to prove that it won't have an impact on the vibrancy or vitality of a town centre, and I note that the shop occupation rate is quite high in both Dalkeith and Bonnyrigg, possibly not the shops that we would all want to see, but all the same, there's a good occupancy rate. So I look at that and I think, well, how can I judge whether or not this application would have a detrimental impact? You know, if the town centres are doing well, in my mind that's not a reason in itself to accept an application, because it could well have a detrimental impact. And I'm just wondering, the Chair or Pete, if you could draw out what evidence you think the applicant has presented that would say, you know, this is the business we intend to conduct, and these are the reasons why it won't have an impact on your town centres.
Thank you, Chair. There's a number of factors which have been considered. The first, if you look at the actual application itself, it's for a drive-through restaurant. So you're looking to make judgments about whether do you want that in your town centre, do you want it in another location. The supplementary guidance makes a point that these sorts of uses are generally not ideal for town centres because of the traffic component of it. The business model is such that they don't want to be in a town centre, they want to be in a main road. In terms of its vitality and viability, you are looking at a number of factors you touched on there about the vacancy rate, so you're trying to start to have an understanding of how vibrant existing town centres are. You're looking at the size of the unit being proposed and whether that's significant enough to impact on those town centres. And then you're also looking at other decisions, and in terms of other decisions, for example, the previous appeal decision that was referenced, and there's discussion of that in the papers, that when the reporter looked at that, although he dismissed the appeal, he made the point that those units there, those drive-through units, because they were effectively only up to 600 square metres in floor space, they were not of a size to impact the vitality of Bonnyrigg and Dalkeith. This application is for two drive-throughs of a combined floor space of approximately 400 square metres, so they're smaller than those. So it's an accumulation of those little bits of information and evidence which end up reaching a judgment call about whether it impacts on the vitality and viability of a town centre. Obviously, elected members have similar information but could weigh that up differently and give more weight to different components and reach a different decision.
Okay. Councillor Hall again.
Peter, even before we adopted the new supplementary guidance that we've got here, I've always had real concerns as to the impact of these additional shops, including the ones that we've extended to all night today, just across the road for this, and the impact that's going to have on our town centre. Am I right, Peter, in saying that you actually already have an application in for a change of use for a hot food takeaway in Bonnyrigg to an office space? Would that be correct?
I think that's correct, Chair, but I don't know the details of that particular application.
Okay. I think it's clear for everybody to see around the table that the effect, as John says, the uptake of shops we've got in our local town centres is good, but is it the ones we want? It's really the question is it the ones that can survive business? And that's what we've got. And a big make of them are either hot food takeaways, restaurants, etc. And the reality is, if we lose these to our town centres, you can already see the effect. For example, Bonnyrigg, the nearby town centre, one of the largest growing areas in Scotland, has just lost a bank, a post office, and another bank going to a digital centre. And it's in danger, I think, of actually being killed stone dead if we continue to allow out-of-town developments. And I'm just wondering, Peter, what weight you're giving to these significant movements at the moment when you're assessing these.
The starting point is the development plan policy, and eateries, and we're talking about drive-through restaurants as in that category, is covered by a different policy position compared to retail and what we call commercial leisure, sort of cinemas and those sort of developments. So when you're looking at developments of retail, commercial leisure, you're right, the central starting point is the town centre-first approach. You have a slightly different approach when it comes to food and drink offerings because the policy position is different. And that's based on an understanding that food and drink, and we're talking about restaurants, can be acceptable in the out of town in other urban areas. So what we've got here in this situation is that you've got a piece of land which is within the built-up area of Dalkeith. It has no restrictive policy in terms of retail or other uses, so you're then making a judgment about whether that eatery, those drive-through restaurants, are acceptable in that location. So you're looking to see whether it can be compatible to neighbouring uses. Is it going to impact on other residential or nearby residential areas? We then had a discussion just about the potential impact or not on a town centre, and we've made a judgment on that, which has obviously influenced the recommendation. So it's slightly different to talking about retail uses, and that's maybe where the difficulty often arises with restaurants and eateries, is that they are treated differently. And if we look across our district, pub restaurants are often located out with the town centre.
Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Russell. Thanks for that, Peter. I think you'll be aware that I disagree with a lot of your thoughts on that. Peter, can I now ask you about the transportation part of this? Over the years, we've historically seen queues at certain times backing out of the current Tesco as it was, and that was pre the time that we were actually where you had a full car park, where you didn't have your McDonald's taking up a big chunk of the space for the building and then the rest for car parking. You've also got your click and collect areas that are cordoned off for the Tesco vans and collection places and that. The additional traffic we're talking about adding to here, at what stage, and I would remind officers here that we're very soon going to see, when we get to the 8th of December, but when this new premises opens and you see the influx of folk over the festive period, we'll soon get the results of whether or no what we've created is an absolute nightmare, a traffic situation in this area, which is sadly what I suspect we have done. What thought and what weight has been given to the additional traffic going in and out there that's already been agreed and the loss of space for parking in these areas, when we've done the traffic management counting this?
Chair, I might call on my transportation colleagues to come up and help with this, but maybe as a starting point, if I can, in the original committee report, which was reported to the October meeting, there's a section identified in the report, starting at section paragraph 8.8, which talks about the traffic implications, talks about the additional traffic volumes in particular. In 8.10, it talks about the peak hours, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, in terms of the traffic numbers. So in terms of assessing the planning application, we have taken on board the numbers that are likely to result from the development, in particular during those peak hours. The council then made an assessment to see whether that's had it would potentially have a detrimental or an unacceptable impact on the council highway infrastructure, in particular the roundabout, and has reached a conclusion that it can accommodate the proposed development. But to be honest, Chair, it's probably a better argument coming from my transportation colleagues.
Mr. Gilfillan.
Okay. The applicant did a transport assessment in May this year and submitted his analysis of what the impact of their unit may be. It's based upon a number of assumptions, and they seem to be broadly very fair and be taking them on board. It will generate new activity. It will also have some pass-by trips as well, and it will have an impact on the queuing vehicles at the junction. It shouldn't be forgetting that the junction, the main traffic flows are on the A7, northbound and southbound. This leg into Tesco's is not part of the public road network. It's a private access to a store, and if Tesco stopped trading, that access would be closed. The impacts on people leaving the site may be congestion. That should not have a negative impact on the operation of the roundabout. People entering the site will use the roundabout, certainly, and there will be some impact on it. But it's a very marginal impact. The major flows on the roundabout are the AM and PM peaks, and those are very large, in excess of 20, 23,000 vehicles per day. The impact of this one at the peak times was a tiny percentage of that. It's not going to make a material change to the road safety or the traffic management or the operation of that roundabout. That was our professional opinion on the information given to us.
Thanks very much. Again,
I just want to follow that up. We've already seen over the years backlog traffic onto this roundabout. Now, this is a critical junction. If this gridlocks, the Hayley Midlothian gridlocks. You say that the applicant has done some traffic management stuff and submitted it. What have we done? Because from a layman's point of view, when I see that prior to McDonald's going in there, prior to click and collect, areas being cut off for there, and I see Tesco staff out having to help try to direct cars in off of that roundabout, I have to think that the lost space and the additional traffic that will be heading there, and when you add the growth of the community to that, I have to think that it's gridlock just going to happen. And if it does decide to happen, what do we then do about it? Because I'm truly baffled here when you can see there's already a problem around the boat that we just keep adding stuff to it.
Mr. Goldfield.
Well, the impact of the new development has been modelled, and that can be accommodated by the roundabout. At peak times, the roundabout is busy, certainly. At other off-peak times, it is not busy. As with any congestion, if you look at an example of Sheriff Hall roundabout, prime example of congestion at peak times, these smaller roundabouts on the A7 also have congestion at peak times. There's no easy answer to that. Signalisation, making it wider, more lanes, are all options the council might want to consider, but the cost of doing those are considerable. Improvements to public transport, walking, cycling, and having facilities which are easily accessible to the general public is probably the way we should be going.
Okay, Councillor Alexander.
Hi. Yes, my concerns are the same as Councillor Milligan's. I think that this presents a considerable risk to the people of Midlothian on several levels. The transport impact. Going into Tesco's at the moment, when it is busy, it is quite dangerous now that the building of McDonald's has started. There's going to be people coming in and out of Tesco's and going to the various other outlets. The roads are quite narrow within the car park in Tesco's, and people coming out, backing out, whatever, and people coming up with trolleys, people with children. There isn't that enough pedestrianisation in the car park itself for additional cars going in and out. Also, when you consider that there's buses coming using the same space, and there's also the garage. I just think that it's a matter of time before there are people going to be injured in the car park. Also, the fumes given off by the cars, I wonder if there has actually been an impact study done on that as well. Also, the retail outlets themselves. I think when you look today that there's on the news, they're talking about the impact that sugary foods and high calorific foods have on the health of our of the population. I think bringing those into such a small area that is, although it's out with the 400 metres from the school gates, it's still accessible to youngsters, and I think that should be looked at as well. It has an impact. So I think on many levels there is a risk to the people of Midlothian.
allowed you to do the health thing, but I would remind you, you can't start picking and choosing on who is and who isn't operating there. You could say the same about a number of outlets within town centres as well. So I know what you were saying, and that's why I allowed it. But just to remind ourselves to keep to the subject, Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. My concern is regarding the existing units that we have in the Dalkeith area and the effect that these new proposals may have on them. We have 3 family-run cafes, we have 4 restaurants and obviously other outlets, fast food, who serve us and serve us well, and they all provide local jobs. So that would be my main concern. I understand the health check assessment that the town centre is vibrant, and there are shops there that may not be what we would all want. But I think the fact that we are well served with food outlets already, I don't really see the need for any more. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've been kind of a little bit confused by some of these sort of hypothetical doomsday scenarios that have been kind of... I mean, I always think it's best just to take a step back and look at the facts. And the facts are, in Midlothian, we already have an example of fast food and other drive-through restaurants. And that's at Straighton, where we also see a major road. We also see major roundabouts. We also see major traffic. But more than just one supermarket, we also see a retail park with the largest retailers we have in Midlothian, such as IKEA and Costco. And the reality is, there is not a problem beyond the pale. It is not bringing gridlock to Midlothian and grinding the county to a halt. I think we just need to kind of live in the real world and realise that, you know, these restaurants are not going to generate 1,000 customers a minute, but it seems to be some of the feelings going around the table. And that it is perfectly viable for these businesses to not detract from our town centres and also not to impact our traffic in the county. And I think we should be looking perhaps more at the reality is, does this fit within the local plan to have these out-of-town restaurants, which it seems to do? Does it provide jobs for our communities, which it seems to do? And you know, it doesn't appear to be, based on the evidence that's been provided, going to impact our town centres, which already appear to be, in Dalkeith, certainly more vibrant than many other town centres across Scotland. So I think we perhaps need to focus more on the facts and less on hypotheticals.
Councillor Cassidy, and then Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Just getting to Andrew's point there, I think using Straighton as an example as to Harden Green is completely opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got at least 4 exits and entrances into Straighton industrial or whatever park it is, retail park. But I agree completely with every word that Derek said there about the impact on the shops in our local areas. Since Morrison's opened, I speak to the local cafes, their businesses dropped drastically. The strain that we're going to put on these places by opening up new retail places within a mile of them is going to be, I think it might be the death knell of some of them. But I also feel that the applicant did an assessment on the road. That's a bit like saying the hunter did an assessment on how many elephants were left. You know, we cannot let the people that are wanting the planning permission tell us, well, you don't think there's going to be enough traffic to create any problems. I'm a local guy. I shop up there. I go up there. I know there's problems already at certain times of day in that place. Putting 3 fast food stores or outlets on that site is going to be catastrophic. It's going to be absolute nightmare, gridlock. So I'm not impressed with this at all.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say regarding Straighton. There are 4, 5 ins and outs of getting into Straighton, and if a drive-through is clogged up, you've got other ways of going in. I visited Tesco's yesterday at 12:30. It's not somewhere that I normally go. It's not my side of the county, and the traffic was extremely busy at 12:30, 1:15 yesterday afternoon. I wouldn't have thought that that was peak by any manner of means. And I had a good look at the site, knowing that we were going to be discussing this today, and just thought, you know, at this time, the amount of traffic that's going in and out, I would have huge concerns about this application on that reason.
Ian again.
Thank you, Chair. Could I ask just what our position is in considering the cumulative effect of development in and around that area and then its impact? So, you know, one of the issues I've had in the past year is knowing that we've had this application along with the McDonald's one and they're to be considered separately, but what is our position when considering the cumulative effect of development and then the impact on traffic and the vitality of our 10 centres, etc.?
Chair, when you assess a planning application, you do consider how that application fits in to the local area or to wherever that application is sited. So you can, in this case, for example, consider those developments that have come before and the accumulation of impacts. So that's a material planning consideration which you can give weight to if you wish to do so, Chair, especially considering the other application, in this case McDonald's, has planning permission under construction. It's a reality as such because you know it's happening. So you can give consideration to that if you wish to do so, Chair. My understanding is that the traffic modelling picked up sites that were committing did have planning permission. So it took on board that issue, but you're right to take it on board.
On that basis, Chair, do you like to get ourselves to a position where we could move a motion on the matter, if that's possible?
Yes, I was just allowing everybody to have their democratic say, Councillor Haggett, in case somebody wanted to say anything else before I actually said, right, I think it's about time we came to a decision. It's been a very long day already. Sorry, Councillor Winchester.
Thank you, Chair. When Councillor Hardy was referring to the roundabout, he was actually referring, I think, to the roundabout that contains Burger King and Kentucky Fried Chicken, which has one access off one of the busiest roundabouts in Mid Lothian. Harden Green doesn't even come close to that roundabout, and there doesn't seem to be a problem there.
Right, I'm going round. Oh, okay, Councillor Mulligan, I'll be lenient. No, if you want, if you've indicated, it's fine. Oh, right, well, okay, are we finished? Well, I didn't realise that. I think there's a phone call for you, Councillor Mulligan. No, seriously, if nobody else has got any questions or comments, we'll move into the formal session, and Councillor Mulligan, you have indicated.
Chairman, given my thoughts earlier, and I take on board what Councillor Hardy and Winchester are saying. However, when you're going into the Burger King up, up there, you're not also going into the biggest Tesco in Scotland, and that would be the fact. I'm making it quite strongly, we've already witnessed what comes to near gridlock at that roundabout, and with the additionality we've already got, I would be really keen to see how we get on through December this year, because if that does gridlock, it'll gridlock the whole communities. For that reason, along with the impact that the continual developments out of town, hopefully takeaways are having, I think, on our town centres, I would like to move refusal.
Could I maybe just alert your words to edge of town, because it technically is not out of town. Just make, if you do edge of town, that just, well, it just keeps it in what the council's position is if it happens to be the one that happens to win the day. Councillor Hackett, thanks for that, Councillor Mulligan.
Thank you, Chair. I'll second Councillor Milligan's motion, and just add that I'm interested to see the McDonald's restaurant bed in and see that the impact of that will have both on our town centres and the traffic before, you know, I would want to consider something like this again.
Is there anybody prepared to move the report? Councillor Hardy.
Yeah, I'm happy to move the report. I think we see a very similar scenario in Streighton. We do not see a problem. And I think we need to accept that, you know, there is a move towards these edge of town, as you put it, restaurants, and particularly important for our shift workers, including NHS workers, for them to be able to get a hot meal at any time of day. So I'm happy to move the motion.
Thank you very much indeed. Is there a seconder for the motion? Esther, you want to say anything? Okay, fine. Right. Anybody else want to say anything before we go to the vote? No, I think everybody's had their democratic say. Therefore, Mr. Broadway, do you want to? Right, okay, I'll do it. Right, there was a motion to refuse the application for the two centres. Can I have those in favour of that, please? Show, please. Okay. And those for the motion to grant, please show.
2, 3, 4.
Okay. The motion to refuse is passed by 8-4. That then takes us on to item 5.5, which is the application for... What's wrong? Oh, sorry. Could somebody see if Councillor Baird is still around? I didn't mean it that way. I mean, if he still wants to return to the meeting,
Russell, see while he's coming back in, can I just ask a question? Because it's just dawned on me here that the next application we're dealing with, Roslyn Lee Hospital, I'm a member of NHS Lothian's board. I'm a non-exec director. Would the monitoring officer please like to give me some directions, because I'm not sure whether or not this is still in their ownership and would be getting sold as a result of this, and could he help me figure out whether or not I should declare an interest and leave or not?
Sorry, Councillor Mulligan, I was just advising the advisor.
It's actually my conveyancing assistant to... Chair, as I understand it, if the property is not within the NHS Lothian's ownership, then there's not a conflict. If it were within the ownership, then my advice would be to declare an interest there.
Councillor Smale.
My information is the NHS has a marginal interest in overage and participation in the sale of some of the units here.
Right, okay, you better go. Standing this, does anybody else want to declare an interest? No? Right. Okay, that then takes us on to Peter's report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This report is with regard to two planning applications and a listed building consent application for development at the former Roslyn Lee Hospital, Roslyn. The three applications together propose a predominantly residential-led redevelopment of the former Roslyn Lee Hospital and its surrounding land. Application A seeks planning permission in principle for up to 280 new dwellings in two fields adjoining the hospital grounds, the North Field and the South Field. Application B proposes the conversion of the listed hospital buildings to form 72 residential dwellings, together with a detailed permission for 24 dwellings in the grounds of the hospital. Application C seeks listed building consent for alterations to the listed hospital buildings, the demolition of the former boiler house, and works to individual listed buildings within the hospital grounds. In total, the applications propose up to 376 dwellings. Up to 280 units in principle and 96 units in detail. Application A also includes up to 250 square metres of commercial floor space for classes 1, 2, 3 or 4. The site will be accessed via the existing local road network, which connects to the B7003 Roslyn Glen Road, the A6094 Howgate to Rosewell Road, and the B7026 Ockendinny Howgate Road. The hospital buildings are Category C listed and comprise the original buildings from the late 19th century and substantial extensions and alterations in the early 20th century and again in the late 20th century. The proposals also include alterations to the listed buildings and the demolition of a number of components, predominantly those late 20th century extensions, which have limited architectural value. The building closed as an NHS medical facility in 2010. The Roslyn Lea site is identified in the Midlothian Local Development Plan as an additional housing development opportunity, and as such, there is a presumption in favour for residential development if the proposal complies with development plan policies and the details of the scheme mitigate any infrastructure requirements arising from the development. Additional housing development opportunity sites are seen as potential housing sites, but because of identified challenges to delivery, they are not relied upon to meet the Council's housing targets in the same way that an allocated housing site is. The proposed scheme seeks to undertake alterations to the listed buildings in a sensitive manner and to undertake development in proximity to the buildings in a way that is not detrimental to the listed building setting. However, there are a number of fundamental concerns with the applications, and these are as follows. Firstly, the proposed scheme presents significant highway safety concerns. The local access roads are narrow and rural in nature, and in the absence of a significant programme of works to improve them, they are not designed to accommodate the volume of traffic proposed. In addition, there is a lack of public transport and active travel opportunities. Secondly, the applicant is not proposing any affordable housing. The Council's policy requires 25% of the units to be affordable. This should equate to 94 units provided on-site or by an alternative off-site mechanism. And thirdly, the applicant is not proposing to meet the consequential impact of the development in terms of developer contributions towards local infrastructure, including education provision. At the time of drafting the committee report, the applicant was offering a contribution which would have met 78% of the required education contribution. This offer has since been revised downwards to a level that would only meet 53% of the required education provision. The applicant's position is that the cost of delivering the proposed development is such that it is not appropriate to meet the developer contributions requirements in full, and as such, the development is dependent on the Council, in effect, subsidising the development. Although there is a significant benefit in seeing the restoration of the listed buildings, it is recommended that this benefit does not, at this time, outweigh the disbenefits of the scheme. In the absence of an acceptable development proposal, the applicant, as the owner of the buildings, has a legal responsibility to maintain the listed buildings. The report sets out that there have been 18 representations and 9 consultation responses, the details of which are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to refuse planning permission and listed building consent for the reasons set out in section 9 of the report.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Ransdorf. I'll just open it up for questions, comments by members. Councillor Hardy.
Yeah, I'm confused about that it not providing any affordable housing. I mean, to my mind, surely any properties that are below the average price are surely affordable, and one and two bed apartments would surely fit within that category.
No, Chair, there's in land use plan terms, but there are definitions about affordable housing, whether that be council housing, whether it's housing managed and operated by a registered social landlord. There are forms of what we call affordable housing. Some properties which are one or two bedroom can still potentially be quite expensive depending on their setting and their design and their size and their form to it. In terms of affordable, it's defined by the planning system, and this proposal does not meet that requirement.
Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions. First of all, just to clarify that the developers made no offer of an additional contribution by way of, if you like, paying for the lack of social housing. And I'm asking for other councillors and officers' experience. Have we ever, from the collective experience here, approved an application that fell so short of the Section 75 requirements.
Thank you, Chair. During the processing of the plan applications, there were ongoing discussions with the applicants regarding the level of developer contribution and the provision or lack of provision of affordable housing. So there was ongoing discussion about that, and the proposed contributions or commitment on behalf of the applicant did change. But what I've just reported to you is the latest position. From their perspective, it's a feeling that there is a significant cost associated with the conversion of the listed building, that would outweigh the other requirements of the local plan in terms of affordable housing and the volume of developer contributions. And just on the second point, Chair, just from my memory, there are occasions where the council does take a reduced developer contribution on occasion if it feels that the benefits of development outweigh that position. And the one that I remember most, Chair, and it is going back a number of years, so the economic position is different, is White Hill House, where the committee granted a residential scheme, and likewise there was a listed building which needed some restoration to it. And at that point, and I'm going back a number of committee cycles, Chair, that the committee decided there was some merit in taking a more relaxed approach on the developer contribution because the benefit, i.e. the restoration of the listed building, outweighed that. But I can't remember off my top of my head how many years I'm talking about, but it's at least six or seven, something like that, Chair.
Councillor Carden.
Thanks, Chair. Peter, I take it we're not asking anything of this developer that we don't ask of other developers.
Councillor Winchester.
Thanks, Chair. Peter, can I ask how much is actually being spent to restore the main building, and is that taken into consideration when the spending on that comes off the money for Section 75, or whether the apartments that are included in that area have been included in the calculation of Section 75 payments that you think that should be paid?
Yeah, Chair. In terms of, no, there's been no deduction from the contribution. And it's maybe if you start at the beginning of this, you have a proposed development which results in X number of dwelling houses. That has a consequential impact in terms of school infrastructure, etc. So you identify what the financial requirements would be to meet that consequence. And that is then put to the developer that we need X amount to meet those consequences. And that's applied here. So they haven't been given a discounted rate because of the listed building. But that's because what happened, Chair, is that in identifying the site in the local plan, the council recognised that you would need a quantum of development to fund the restoration. So what you had was that, as well as identifying just the building and its immediate grounds for development, we identified two neighbouring fields. I referenced them as the North Field and the South Field, and that was for new house building. And that the idea behind that was that you would need that volume of new house building to fund the restoration. So that's where the council's tried to help financially, is by giving that additional land for development, Chair. Going back to the original report, to be honest, I must apologise, I cannot remember off the top of my head the exact cost of the conversion of this building.
Councillor Winchester.
Thanks, Chair. Peter, I'm surprised that we've not actually been furnished with any costs, because as far as I'm aware, this building has got a substantial amount of dry rot, will require a substantial amount of money to repair. And you're saying they're only given, they've only offered three quarters or two thirds of the Section 75 payments. But we need actual numbers. What are the houses, what would have been the Section 75 payments that you would have received? What have they offered? Is this a firm offer? Have you been in negotiations with them? Have you spoken to them about the Section 75 payments, etc.?
Chair, to answer the last point first, yes, there's been a lot of discussions, a lot of negotiations, back and forth about the numbers, shared the workings out, the calculations. Chair, I'm happy to share some of the costs, but it comes with a caveat, which is that it's, in terms of planning terms, it's about whether a development can mitigate the impact of that development. It's not necessary to be seen to buying planning permission as such, so you get very cautious about talking about numbers, Chair.
Could I just maybe stop you there? Because I'm very cautious that this is a public meeting and I don't want to get into discussion. I understand what you're asking, and it might be that we might want to continue that, and you might want to do something by way of a circular privately, but I don't want it to be in the public arena. Sorry to caution you, Peter. I'm sorry, I should have actually asked for you to caution us, Alan.
Yes, I'd like to amplify Councillor Winchester's remarks. I think it's impossible for us as councillors to make a quality decision here because we don't know the financial implications of rescuing this major, indeed the largest listed building in Midlothian. What we can fear, I think, is that if we take a substantial delay in coming to a positive decision in some shape or form for this, that the deterioration of this major building in our landscape will continue to the point where we might lose it entirely. I believe the developers have created a financing structure in an open book way in its extensive discussions with the planning officers, and we should be able to see that this is not a normal planning application. We should be able to see that there is a very substantial cross-subsidisation in the public interest on account of the restoration monies that will be required to return the Rowand Anderson building and the other buildings of the hospital to usable condition. So to turn it down on the basis that it is not fully complying with 25% of social housing or 100% of Section 75, considering there is this black hole sitting at the middle of it, strikes me as the wrong methodology, and we need to spend more time working out what is the true public benefit of this development such that we can make a quality decision as to whether or not it is in Midlothian's interest to allow this development to take place. That decision has to be made fairly soon because of the deterioration of the building.
I understand what you're saying, and I think Peter alluded to the fact that under normal circumstances the council would have probably allowed what one calls enabling development, and therefore there isn't that sense of clawback from there. But I'm quite happy if the committee agrees to continue that, and we'll actually have the item or the information in private and deal with it there. If that gets agreement, fine. If it doesn't, then we're going to have to continue to debate and discuss the application in front of us. It's just to try and get us out. I don't want to have figures bandied about, Councillor Smale, because this application is not going to be the only application that's coming in that talks in terms of figures and numbers. And I wouldn't want us to get into this situation where if something was to be turned down, there could be an argument that, I'm not talking about this application, another application, there could be an argument that it's because, you know, the cost wasn't there or that. I just want to keep a level playing field. So I'm making the request. If people feel that would help them make a final decision, can we continue that to allow members to get that information? If you don't want to do that, then we'll continue on with the discussion and we will come to a conclusion on the application that's in front of us today with the information that's been furnished. So I'm trying to be fair, but you know, if people don't want to, it's fair enough. I understand that.
Yes, I very much agree with your approach, Chair. I don't think detailed numbers in this forum would be helpful. This is a rather granular and complex situation, but I believe we should not make a negative decision today when so much time has been spent by our officers and by the developers in trying to rescue this building and create a viable proposition.
I'd echo those words from the Provost. I think we need to do this sooner rather than later, because when we did go up to this building, it's an iconic building that's oldest, or almost the biggest C-listed building in Midlothian, and to lose this would be a travesty because of some numbers. And I think that we need to we need to knuckle down with this one and get done sooner rather than later.
Committee was agreed to continue. We could put it on the back, and that is dealt with. We can arrange to put it on the back of another meeting, and then we can get it done by way of a special planning committee meeting to deal with this particular issue, with the information to elected members in advance of that. And I'm trying to be fair, but if we want to make a decision today, by all means, make it. But it might be a decision that not all of us end up being happy with. So that's all I'm trying to do. I'm probably buying a little bit of time for us to get that information. Councillor Winchester, you're the one that started it, and I'll let you finish it.
I suggest that the committee actually makes a decision today. We're coming into a season where even more damage will be happen to the building whilst we're having private meetings on discussions on financial matters.
You're right, Councillor Winchester, but given that we're moving into the season of goodwill, who knows, that it might be a positive outcome. Councillor Muirhead and then Councillor Hackett.
I'm not averse to waiting for another cycle or whatever to get additional information. However, we're talking about, it would be unfortunate if numbers precluded the restoration of that building. There are numbers that will preclude or prevent us from being able to build the schools we need to build if we're not getting the developer contributions in for major developments in this county. We already know that we're in a situation where there's an affordability gap in terms of our capital spend on our education programme going forward. And it would be totally wrong of us to sit back and allow a major development like this to go ahead without taking that into consideration. There are also concerns about the, as was highlighted, the highway safety concerns and things that need to be addressed as well. But the big issue I've got with this is the lack of developer contributions. We can't just take the restoration of that building ahead of the other obligations that we've got. We really need to bear that in mind. To have, if these figures are the most up-to-date ones, to have an offer from the developer is 78% towards education requirements, and then it being reduced to 53% of education requirements. These are not just figures that we pluck out of the air. These are calculations that we establish to determine what we require to provide as a result of housing being built. And we can't just ignore that. So I would caution people, laudable though it may be, and as I said earlier, I've been round the site, I've seen it, I would want to save the building as well, but we can't ignore the position that the council's in.
Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. If I picked up correctly, Peter, can I just clarify it, whether or not this is approved today or at some point in the future or not approved at all, it is still the owner's responsibility to maintain the property under the kind of C listing?
Yes, Chair, that's the bottom line, is that owners have responsibility to look after buildings. I know that's expensive in this case and that's a commitment, but they have a legal responsibility to do so.
Well, with respect to yourself, Chair, I'll second or move the motion that it be continued.
Are members happy to continue it? And Councillor Winchester apart. And if they are, I'll put it on the back of another agenda meeting and we'll have a special committee meeting on this particular item. Because we do have to make a decision one way or the other, and it's not fair to anybody around the table not to. Councillor Smale.
I would second that motion, and that special committee should be as soon as there's a reasonable degree of agreement between the parties to what the numbers actually mean.
Is that agreed, apart from Councillor Winchester? I will take a vote then, if that need be right. Those in favour of continuation for a special committee meeting, please show.
1, 2, 3. Right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10.
Okay. Right, those against? Okay. Right, 3. Okay. 3. 2, 3. 3.
3.
Okay, it's continued, and we'll have a special meeting as soon as we practically can. Thanks for that. Thanks for your forbearance. Right. The next application is 5.6, which is planning permission direction of four houses at Airy Bank, Quarry Bank, Coosland, on pages 153 to 166. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This report is with regard to two planning applications, which form a single development proposal for the erection of four dwellings and associated works on land at Airy Bank, Quarry Bank, Coosland. The proposed housing development is laid out in a cul-de-sac arrangement along an access road which is partially constructed. Plot 1 is separated from the other three units by an area of open ground retained to maintain views for the neighbouring dwelling house. Three of the proposed dwellings have four bedrooms, are two-storey and have integral garages. One of the proposed dwellings is of a different design and has the second storey of accommodation in the roof space. It has four bedrooms and attached garage. All four units are detached properties. The proposed development also includes the provision of boundary fencing and the retention enhancement of landscaping along the site boundaries. The application site is located within the built-up area of Coosland, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate development. The application site is situated within a predominantly residential area where the proposed residential development would be compatible to the neighbouring land uses, subject to the details of the proposed development complementing the character of the area and protecting the amenity of existing neighbouring properties. All the proposed houses are large in terms of their height, bulk and massing, at odds with the character of the surrounding area and scale of other buildings in Coosland. The house types are the same as those submitted in previous applications, which have been refused and subsequent reviews dismissed by the local review body. The committee report sets out there have been 14 representations and 5 consultation responses, the details of which are set out in section 5 and 6 of the said report. The recommendation is to refuse planning permission.
Okay, thank you very much, Peter. Open up for questions, comments by members of committee. Councillor Smale.
Yes, many of us will remember the LRB visit to this site. I have to lead by saying that in terms of Coosland, I think the original mistake was to allow Airy Bank House, which is very large. But once you've done that, the idea that the only permissible development will be some smallish houses creates, I think, an aesthetic problem. You have a sort of mother hen and little chicken situation, which will look extremely odd. It being a very large site with a wonderful view across the escarpment, I think it is appropriate for the four architect-designed houses to be built. The developer has acceded to suggestions made by the councillors on that visit that the houses be grouped away from the rest of the village. So the whole appears to me to be an aesthetically logical development here. But I wouldn't have started from this point, but since we have Airy Bank House, I think there's no reason not to do these four.
Thank you very much. Has anybody else got any questions? Councillor Haggett.
Thank you, Chair. Just looking at 4.7, and it talks about the LRB saying to the applicant we would be minded for house type X. And just to clarify what's different to the application that we have in front of us versus what the LRB was indicating might have been an approved or an acceptable development?
Yeah, Chair, the last application was refused and was referred to the local review body as referenced before. Site visit was carried out and then there's a discussion. That proposal comprised the same units as proposed today and a slightly different configuration. The local review body at that meeting discussed the unit types, one of which, unit X, is smaller than the other one, and on the back of that, the local review body consensus was that the large unit was unacceptable, but the smaller one was acceptable, on the basis that the applications just come in with the same unit types. That local review body decision is a material consideration, hence why the officers have looked to reinforce that
that decision.
I think, like Councillor Smale, the thing is, if you were dealing with the application, would you have started here? And the difficulty for me was before, and also the LRB, is if you go back even further, the applicant actually had planning permission for the whole site, and indeed it was, from what I understand, was all to do with Section 75 contributions. He said, sorry for being amused about that, and it never went ahead. Now, the large house did go ahead, and we were up there, for loads of our members of the LRB, were actually up there and saw that, and it just seems to me that, you know, what Councillor Smale said is right. Sometimes you've then got to look at what's there, and what would fit in with that. And given that that large house is there, perhaps, you know, on balance, then it's something that we could go ahead with, because all of us that were up there were not against the principle of housing on the site. What we were about was where these houses were actually located at that point. So, you know, I have to say, I'm coming round to being rather sympathetic that we get on and crack on and get this site developed out, because it's just going to go back and forward, and I do feel that we've come to the position now where I think we're in a place to give it permission. But that's the comment that I have. Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Peter, could I ask about the European protected species? Because I know that it's not just... that's the second recommendation on that. Is that to do with the bats?
Yes, Chair, it's to do with bats. It's to do, and it's also, to be fair, it's an unresolved issue which could be resolved. You've got a situation where the applicant has submitted some information which, under scrutiny, there's errors in that information and it needs proper analysis. I imagine if the applicant does additional work on that, that could actually be resolved. But at the moment, it is an unresolved issue for us, so hence why it's the second reason for refusal.
I did think, Councillor McCall, that European protected species for those people that voted Remain. However, where are we on the application? Yes, please.
Shall I move that we accept the request for planning permission and therefore contravene the decline by the officers?
I'm inclined to second you, Councillor Smale. Is there anybody who wants to move against it? Councillor McCall?
Yes.
I was helping to protect you. You voted Remain.
Yes, I know. How do you know that? I did, but how do you know? No, for the bats...
That's a motion and an amendment. Those in favour of agreeing to let the application go forward, please show. In other words, give planning permission, please show.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Chair.
Uh-huh. Those against?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Okay, right. The motion to uphold the recommendation is carried by 7 votes to 6. Okay. Right, where am I now? Right, that then brings us on to item 6.1, which is a private report. For any members of the public, could I please ask you to vacate your seats so that we can deal with this item in private? Thank you very much all for your attendance.